Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. We know a lot from popular culture and the news about the illegal drug trade. Think of the movie Traffic, which explored how narcotics were smuggled into the United States and distributed all over the country. Well, human trafficking takes similar forms. People are smuggled into the country and forced to work against their will in labor on farms, hospitality or restaurant industries, just to name a few, or in the sex trade. And native-born Americans are also at risk in these trades. My guest today co-founded a nonprofit advocacy and education organization called Truckers Against Trafficking that works to educate the trucking community, both drivers and those that work at truck stops, about telltale signs of human trafficking. They also work directly with multiple law enforcement agencies. Their advocacy has brought them to all 50 states and even to neighboring countries, all in an effort to counter modern-day slavery, which ensnares an estimated tens of millions of people around the globe, often children. Kyla Lanier is a former high school history teacher who co-founded Truckers Against Trafficking with her sister, Candace Paris, who serves as the organization's executive director. Lanier is the deputy director and based here in Tulsa, and she came by the studio to teach us about the extent of the problem and TAT's impressive track record of success. She's my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Kyla Lanier, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Let's start by just defining, you know, what is trafficking?
Human trafficking is the exploitation of human beings through force, fraud, or coercion for the purposes of either forced labor or the commercial sex industry, wherein a third party is making a profit, and that's your trafficker. So it's where you take somebody and you compel them into a labor situation or a commercial situation where they cannot leave, they are being threatened, and they do not receive the money for that action.
And what's the extent of the problem in the United States or in the region here?
Well, globally, the statistic is 21 million people are enslaved in the world today, and it's a $150 billion global industry. In the United States, it's $32 billion a year. The stats are a little bit shaky right now. They're being reorganized, so I don't have the exact number, but we have hundreds of thousands of people within the United States that are both used in labor trafficking and the commercial sex industry.
Where do you rely? What statistics do you consider reliable that you use? Are they from
government? We use the International Labor Organization stats, and those are the most conservative stats out there, actually.
One thing I've always been curious about is does human trafficking occur? This is how I think of it, and you can correct me. I'm sure it's a naive view. But I think of people essentially being smuggled into the country or people who are sort of willing to pay a trafficker to get across the border sort of furtively, secretively, but then wind up being enslaved because they have no leverage or no power. But for one, is that sort of a realistic example? And then two, are there U.S.-born people who are trafficked or enslaved?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so smuggling is a crime against a border, and it's typically voluntary where you are paying a smuggler or a coyote to bring you across whatever national border. They are highly vulnerable to being trafficked because, obviously, number one, they don't typically speak the language of the country they're going to. Number two, they're fleeing a horrible situation. And number three, they know that they're doing something illegal, and so they're not going to go to law enforcement when something's occurring to them because they're fearful of deportation, they're fearful of jail time, things of that nature. So they are highly vulnerable to traffickers, and so oftentimes smuggled people will become trafficked. But we actually have a lot of natural-born citizens here in the United States who are trafficked as well. Most of our citizens here in this country are trafficked within our country's borders into sex trafficking.
And any sense of the proportion of that relative to trafficking globally or nationally?
I mean, I say the stats are sort of in flux right now. There was a report that everybody used in the movement, at least in the beginning, that said 300,000 American kids were at risk for being trafficked sexually each year. And that has been disputed by the Washington Post. And so all of these different studies are taking place. Just to give you some perspective, University of Texas just put out a study 2 weeks ago where they said there are 300,000 trafficking victims in the state of Texas, just in the state of Texas, 300,000. So if you're looking at that, then obviously if these studies can be replicated in other states, we might have a better picture of it. I'm just hesitant to give like a solid number of what's happening in the U.S. because we don't have that data at this point.
But I mean, a very real problem and of course difficult to put accurate numbers on. So you mentioned children. When we think of trafficking, is this primarily a problem of children or is it equal adult children numbers? Or I mean, I know, again, numbers are hard to come by, but just in terms of understanding the scope of the problem.
Wow. I think you actually have a lot of adults and children in both labor trafficking and sex trafficking. I think the focus has been on the children in the sex trafficking industry because of buyers wanting younger and younger victims to purchase. Traffickers have gone out to find those younger and younger victims to exploit. So that's where the focus has been. But you have just as many victims that are being exploited at 18, 19, 20. A trafficker can still make money off of you at 30. He's going to. And so you have a lot of adults trapped in prostitution against their will. I think the last study that I saw through the prostitution research and education, they said 86% of prostituted adults in the United States had pimps. 86%. So that's trafficking victims. So you're looking at most people in prostitution are actually sex trafficking victims by the federal definition.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting. I hadn't made that connection.
Yeah.
Wow. There's the sex worker trafficking, but there's also the labor trafficking, which is where
right.
someone is trafficked just to purely be an indentured servant of some kind. I mean, work on a farm? Is that what we
think? Yeah,
or
we're
in
talking
a factory?
Agricultural. Mm-hmm. At nail salons, there's been a lot of abuses of those women being brought in, forced to work 16, 17-hour days, 7 days a week, and not paid. They're paying off this debt that never seems to go away. In restaurants, hospitality, domestic service, as maids, as nannies. Yeah, labor trafficking can be basically anywhere where labor is happening. You mm-hmm. could have an exploited person being trafficked in those situations. And then sex trafficking in both your legal commercial sex industry, like strip clubs and massage parlors, as well as in the illegal sex industry, whether that's street prostitution or through sex ads, things of that nature.
So what law enforcement agencies look at trafficking? And I guess we're going to talk a little bit about your organization, Truckers Against Trafficking. But for one thing, with whom do you work and collaborate in terms of law enforcement? And then just in terms of point of information, you know, which government agencies or law enforcement agencies do we think of in this regard?
All law enforcement agencies would be tasked with this issue. I mean, it's a crime. It's a federal crime. It's a state crime. And so you'll see a lot of FBI working on this issue, HSI, the Homeland Security, working on this issue, as well as your local police forces, your motor vehicle enforcement, commercial vehicle enforcement, sheriffs, all agencies do. But if you're looking at like the big raids that happen across the country, that's FBI collaborating and working together interagency.
Do you have a sense from the work you do of success, so to speak, in terms of how, I mean, we hear about, we're very conscious, I think, if you follow any popular media about the drug war, the wars, the narcotics. Has law enforcement been successful in breaking up some of these trafficking rings, or is it sort of like a hydra where you may knock down one trafficking cartel, but another one pops up?
I think we're really in the beginning of stages of funding law enforcement to go after this issue. And, you know, funding typically comes from public outcry. The pressure on law enforcement and government to act comes from public outcry. And we're just reaching that point where people are starting to realize what it actually is. The movie Taken put it on people's radars, but that was such a not realistic version of what it looks like here in the United States, that people were looking for this very specific type of victim, and they were passing by real victims on a daily basis. And so I think that, you know, getting that information out there, raising that awareness about what it really looks like, you're then starting to get law enforcement to get funded, to get the training that they need to go after this problem. So have they busted some huge rings? Yeah, absolutely they have. Have they gone after familial traffickers and they're calling it what it is now? Yeah, where moms and dads are selling their kids. Are they going after your street gangs like MS-13 and the Crips and Bloods that have been recruiting out of middle schools and high schools and forcing girls into prostitution? Yeah. So they're doing that and they're making these busts, whether it's your street level pimp, whether it's your large organized crime group. You have all of these different agencies, both globally as well as within the United States, that are fighting it. It's been underfunded as a movement. And, you know, we're obviously hoping that Trump's administration will continue the work of Obama's administration and George W. Bush's administration, but to expand it and really increase the federal dollars that they put behind this effort.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Kyla Lanier. She is the co-founder and deputy director of Truckers Against Trafficking, and you are based here in Tulsa. Tell us a little bit about Truckers Against Trafficking. When was it founded, or what brought it into existence?
Truckers Against Trafficking was founded back in 2009. It's sort of an interesting story. My mom sent my sisters and I a book called Not for Sale by David Batstone. And she's like, she's always buying us books and saying, read this. And this one, she was like very adamant. She was like, you need to read this book. And so we're like, okay. And it was a good overview book, Global Domestic Labor and Sex Trafficking. And we all read it. And I just think we were horrified that slavery still existed. We knew there was injustice. We knew there was exploitation. But slavery seemed to be this just unfathomable thing that it still was around. And so we had a conference call because we were in Washington State, Texas, Colorado, and Oklahoma. And we're like, well, we got to do something about this. And this was back in 2007. So we started our first organization called Chapter 61 Ministries. And we had this very doable goal of ending human exploitation worldwide, you know, while we all were raising our kids and having full-time jobs. But as a part of that, my sister up in Colorado, who's now TAT's executive director, she put on a human trafficking awareness conference, and she had all the big guys there, Polaris, who runs the hotline, IJM, Not for Sale, Free the Slaves. And so we went up to learn from the experts. And in one of the breakout sessions I attended, the guy was talking about his desire to train gas station attendants on the signs of human trafficking. And that just made perfect sense to me. And I went back to my mom and I said, we should do something like this. And she said, you know who we should get? We should get truckers. Her parents had owned a small motel in El Paso when she was growing up, and most of their clientele were truckers. And she's like, most of them are really good guys. If they knew what was really happening, they'd do something about it. And from that, Truckers Against Trafficking was born.
Okay, so why truckers?
Why truckers? Truckers are the eyes and ears of our nation's highways. They see things that other people don't. They're already trained to be vigilant. And let's just put it this way. There are more truck drivers on the road any given day than there are law enforcement officers. So if they were trained to be looking for the signs of human trafficking and to recognize it and to know what to do when they saw it and call in that law enforcement's going to be out there recognizing it, recovering victims, and arresting perpetrators. And so we thought, my gosh, they're in these locations where they might intersect with victims. They are the perfect population to go after this.
And so truckers don't necessarily see it while they're driving, but more at truck stops or filling stations, they might see. What might they see? What are the clues?
Well, hotels and motels, city streets, bus terminals, truck stops, gas stations, a lot of different locations where they're at. And again, they're looking for stuff because it's part of their job, you know, to always be paying attention to stuff. So some of the signs they might see are a van or an RV parked at a location where they're not normally. Just they know what things are supposed to look like. And so if they're a little bit off, just to be paying attention to that. Are there men going to and from that van or RV? If you've got a motel located by a place where they are resting for the night, watching, are there women coming in and out? Are there men coming in and out and then going back to their cabs or getting in their cars and leaving? Just paying attention to some of those signs. Is there CB chatter about commercial company? Where you have prostitution, you do have sex trafficking, period. End of story. And so is there talk of prostitution? If so, be looking for the signs. Are there branding tattoos on the victims? Is there an older woman or a man walking with a younger person, cab to cab to cab, things of this nature? So any of these types of things that they might be seeing, to call it in.
So the cab to cab example is at a truck stop.
Where that would be at a truck stop.
Just trying to peddle, literally peddle some flesh. I, for one, do drive on highways, but I don't spend a lot of time or much at all on truck stops. What does the average person not know about truck stops? I mean, besides
that, truck stops are some of our greatest partners in this fight against human trafficking. They have trained their employees. We work with TA Petro, Pilot Flying J, Loves. This is a crime that comes to them. You think about it. Truck stops have to have lots that are very large to allow truckers to sleep for the night so that they get their rest. And so then they have to have security, but they also have to have it quiet and dark so that people can sleep. And so when you have these types of situations, these types of areas, traffickers are going to look at that and say, ha-ha, a great place for us to bring our victims because we're not going to necessarily be seen. So we work with the truck stops, and they have improved their lighting, they've improved their security, and their employees are looking for it, and their employees are trained to, instead of run the girls off the lots, to really ask them, do you need some help? Is there something I can do for you? Is there somebody that I can call? And so what I would tell you is, working in conjunction with both the truck driver as well as the truck stop employee is critical in the fight.
And that's what you guys have been doing, not just
yes.
the truckers, but the truck stop. So what do you have a sense? I mean, you've been in existence now going on eight years.
8 years, yeah.
How, you're a small organization, how many... How do you do it? How do you just go truck stop to truck stop? Do you call ahead? Do you schedule? I mean, at this point, you must have made an impact. But how far along are you?
Yeah.
You want to educate pretty much every trucker, I suppose, in the country.
Yeah, well, we realized very quickly that with the small staff, and we're at our largest we've ever been with seven employees, but there are over 400,000 trucking companies in the United States of America. And we realized we could not go to each one personally. And so we created a trucking-specific training DVD. That really speaks to them. We have FBI on there. We have the hotline personnel on there. We have truckers speaking, our executive director speaking, a survivor of sex trafficking who was saved through the call that a trucker made is on there. And so we have this very compelling training video that's geared towards the trucking industry. We also created wallet cards that have red flag indicators as truckers might encounter it, questions that they could ask a potential victim, and then information that law enforcement would want if they're making that call. And of course, the national hotline number right on there as well. And so we try to get that in the hands of every truck driver and truck stop employee. So that's the core training program for TAT. And so we send those materials out free of charge to any truck stop or any trucking company, trucking school that wants those.
So one question that I have as a healthcare professional is, I have been aware and participated in a session where health professionals were trained to recognize victims of trafficking because, of course, they do access the medical
right.
system on occasion. Do your outreach efforts include other domains, or is it really you're really focused on this the area of trucking and truck stops? I mean, it's good to be obviously very
right.
task-focused, but do you have interface with healthcare professionals as well?
We do not have interface mm-hmm. with healthcare professionals, but we know that there are groups that are doing that, that are making that like their top priority. And it's really exciting to see. What we want to see is our model replicated across transportation modes, across other industries, the nonprofit sector working with the for-profit sector to really break down these barriers, you know, and to close loopholes to traffickers. And so I know Dignity Health out in California, they're doing a great job of training. I believe the healthcare profession is really moving in that direction heavily, where they're training emergency responders and emergency room personnel to notice the signs, to ask the right questions, and to identify these victims.
Earlier today, you showed me your annual report from Truckers Against Trafficking, and on one of the pages, there's a map of your impact, and it's pretty impressive because, as you mentioned, a seven-person organization, you have I would say more than half the states where they have adopted in part this model, and you have, you know, it looks like three states that have adopted this model in whole. And your goal, you said, is to make the entire map blue, which
right.
would be all states. What's the MVE model? What does that stand for?
Yeah, and this is just, I'll say, this is just one map that we have. We do everything by color-coded maps. It just helps us, motivates us. This is our Iowa MVE model, and this is the map where we are looking at the law enforcement that intersects with trucking. And so that's going to be your motor vehicle enforcement or your commercial vehicle enforcement. They're manning the way stations, the rest areas. They're doing the safety compliance with truck stops and trucking companies across the state. They work with the State Trucking Association. And by the way, that map, the State Trucking Association, is all dark blue. All 50 state trucking associations
wow.
partner with Truckers Against Trafficking, and we work with all of them. But with the Iowa MVE, what we really want to see is we want to train law enforcement to recognize the signs. We want them to also interact with truckers in a way that says, hey, we want to partner with you in this, pass out the wallet cards, give them the information about it, and then really help the truckers recognize that they are critical in ending this, in fighting this, to recognize it and to call into law enforcement when they see it. So, yeah, we have 28 states that have adopted the model in part or in full.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Kyla Lanier. She's the co-founder and deputy director of Truckers Against Trafficking. And we're talking about the organization's model for educating those in the trucking industry, both truckers themselves and people who work at truck stops, own truck stops, to identify and report human trafficking, which takes many forms and seems to have a broad global impact. Ohio here is listed as being the only state that mandates Truckers Against Trafficking training for all entry-level commercial driver's license holders. And is that that's your goal, is to get all 50 states essentially doing that. So you are embedded as anyone going to get a commercial driver's license in the state of Ohio has to have your training.
Yeah. Ohio sort of shocked us with that one. It was a rule change. Captain Crispin from the Ohio State Highway Patrol was sat on that board, and he's like, we're just going to have them do an hour-long TAT training. And so they passed it, and then that sort of was mind-blowing for us. We were like, we can do that? Let's do that. And so we actually have mirror bills pending in the state of Texas and Kentucky that are being sponsored. Kansas as well has sponsored a bill to mandate this for all CDL holders in their states as well. Washington, a Department of Licensing, it doesn't even have to be a rule or a law change there. They sit on the board of, this is what the curriculum is. We dictate it. We're going to mandate TATS training for all of our CDL schools. So it's different in every state, but we're looking at how can we go state to state to state and make sure that, you know, we are attempting to at least get our materials in the hands of every CDL driver.
You're an organization of only 7 people, as you mentioned. How do you have such a broad outreach into essentially all 50 states? And you said you've hit all of the
state trucking associations.
State trucking associations. So, talk about a legislative track record, or it's not legislative exactly, but it's in terms of the administrative regulations of commercial driver's license. How have you been so successful? Like, what's your strategy?
What I would tell you is we have amazing partners. And with the state trucking associations, those are private nonprofits as well in each state. And so it was just a matter of talking, networking, sharing the vision, sharing the problem. And what I would tell you is the trucking industry has responded to TAT in a way that one could only hope. They have seen it through human eyes of this could be their child. This could be someone that they care about. This is an abomination that is taking place, and that they want to be part of the solution. And instead of shirking that responsibility or saying, well, hey, this isn't my issue, this isn't my problem, we've got a lot of other issues in the trucking industry that we need to deal with, they've said, let's take this on, let's do something about it. So I would tell you it has been relationship-based. It's been word of mouth through the industry. And then with our law enforcement partners, this part's been growing over the last several years, and we've just released a law enforcement training DVD that we'll make available for free to all law enforcement agencies. I just got back from Missouri earlier this week training their highway patrol. And so we go around the country and do free law enforcement trainings. We have the DVD, and it's just our partners taking this on as their own issue, using us as a resource, and really us working together. That is how we do it. We couldn't do it just as 7 people. If we did not have the partnerships that we had, if we did not have people believing that they could be a part of the solution to ending human trafficking, we would be nowhere.
Tell us about efforts right here in Oklahoma. How far along is this, if it is at all?
Yeah, well, we are partnered with the Oklahoma Trucking Association. The Oklahoma Corporation Commission has started passing out our wallet cards at the way stations and ports of entry here in the state. We are hoping to, I had spoken with a couple of the OCC officers, and we are looking at possibly doing some training here with Highway Patrol. So that would be wonderful if we could really talk to them about some case studies and interdiction stops, red flag indicators for them, and, you know, the part that they could play as well.
So, Kyla Lanier, you helped found this organization, Truckers Against Trafficking, and you told us the origin story about your mom essentially giving this book to you and your sisters.
Yes.
What was it that resonated with you? Or, I mean, what do you think it was that led you, I guess, and your sister, or you said you have another sister?
Yes.
Who works in...
She works for the Texas Attorney General. She's a prosecutor. She prosecutes there. She's their top human trafficking prosecutor.
My goodness. So, yeah. So what was it for you personally? That it was it just the camaraderie of working in your family, or was it more than
no,
that?
No. I was a teacher in Broken Arrow. And I think really it's a justice issue. When I looked out at my students, I taught sophomores, and they're a target for traffickers. And it angered me. And with a child of my own, I was just like, this should not be happening in our country. This should not be happening in the world, but it certainly should not be happening in our country. And I need to do something about it. I just think that all of us are just very justice oriented. You know, I mean, some people have gifts of gentleness or hospitality. We have the gift of justice in this family. And so I would say that that is the compelling force.
So what would you like to see going forward, or what would the organizational goals be, without leafing through your annual report, I mean, for the organization or for you, or to address this problem on your wish list?
You know, we want to make sure the IOMV model gets implemented in all 50 states. We want to deepen our relationships with the state trucking associations in all 50 states. We want to see every commercial driver out there with our materials in hand. We want to expand internationally. I'll be headed to Mexico middle of the month to work with Consejo Ciudadano. That is their national hotline, their human trafficking hotline in Mexico. They're wanting to replicate our model in Mexico, so we'll be working on strategies for that. Brazil wants to adopt our coalition build model. And so working with Brazil, I was down there last year and working with them to hopefully conduct a coalition build in their country as well, and get that started, working with law enforcement and the trucking industry to really close those loopholes to traffickers at a local level. We want to see our model replicated across modes of transportation, and we are looking at, we are creating materials for the bus industry as well. We have already those overlaps with the law enforcement. Commercial vehicle work with both buses and trucks, and so we just created a bus wallet card, and we're looking at creating a bus training video as well. So I think we have a lot of irons in the fire, and we are excited just to spread this message and to continue the work. We still have a lot of work to do, but we are motivated.
It seems, yeah, you seem very well organized too. So if individuals are motivated by hearing you interviewed here, I mean, where can people turn for more information on this issue or your organization?
Well, we are on Facebook, Truckers Against Trafficking, and we have a very healthy following and a lot of good stories that go out. But I would also say our website is fantastic, truckersagainsttrafficking.org. They could review the annual report. It's on a flipbook right on our website as well. But if they go to About Us and then What We Do, they can see all six programs and go in depth with each one of those and really learn about what it is Truckers Against Trafficking does and what our goals are.
I'd like to ask a question about, because you have quotations and have stories from victims that you've helped,
yeah,
in terms of identifying this problem. If someone is illegally trafficked here, or let's say they're brought to the U.S. and then they're enslaved in some way, whether in labor or in the sex industry, but eventually the perpetrator is caught. If the immigrant is here, you know, technically undocumented or illegally, is there a different classification that since they've been a victim of trafficking, they're given some kind of recourse to stay here and,
yes,
and granted asylum?
Under the TVPA, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which is the federal law, if a smuggled individual is a trafficking victim, there is a protection and they'll be able to have a visa. They'll have to testify against their trafficker in order to stay here, but they'll have that protection. Mostly what our truckers are seeing are U.S. victims. And so we don't have that extra layer for the most part. It's U.S. kids and U.S. adults that are being trafficked at these locations where truckers are finding them.
So in those rare instances where you've had someone here that's undocumented and trafficked, have they been able or willing to testify against their traffickers in order to get the visa?
We have not had those particular cases, uh-huh, but yes.
Yeah, okay.
The U.S. has, yes.
Well, Kyla Lanier, it's really been interesting. Thank you so much for your time today and teaching us about Truckers Against Trafficking and the problem of human trafficking.
Thanks for having me.
Kyla Lanier is co-founder and deputy director of Truckers Against Trafficking. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. If you've missed any of our shows, you can always stream them online anytime from your smartphone, tablet, or computer. Just go to our website, studiotulsa.org. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.